of terrorist actors and disassociating them from Islam.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm Dab Stedman, your host, and my guest today is Cindy Scheel, the executive director of the PAW team based here in Portland. We'll be talking today about the special and important niche that her organization fills and why the services it provides are so valuable to our community. Cindy is a native Portlander who has worked with several local nonprofits in the area of development and has been heading up the PAW team now for nearly 4 years. Under her direction, this organization was recently named the Pet Charity of the Year by the Portland Mercury newspaper, which praised the PAW team as one of the rare organizations making a positive impact on the welfare of both animals and people. Also last year, the PAW team received a letter of commendation from Portland Mayor Charlie Hales, noting that, quote, "The work you do caring for the companion animals of Portland's homeless is greatly appreciated," end quote. Welcome to Voices for the Animals, Cindy, and congratulations on your program's great success.
Thanks, Deb. I'm delighted to be here.
Let's start out by telling our listeners a little bit about the history of the PAW team and what you're all about.
Well, PAW team was started by a group of vets who literally were just downtown seeing the same things that we all see, some young kids on the street corner with their wonderful pit bulls, and they put down their coffee and said, "Hey, we're vets, we're here to help." And that blossomed into doing kind of street corner clinics every quarter. Back in 1999, we became a 501c3 in 2003, and we've gotten bigger and stronger ever since.
And what would you say your core mission is at PAW Team?
Our goal is to help keep people and pets together by providing free veterinary care to the folks that are homeless or living in acute poverty.
Well, that's a wonderful goal to have. And exactly who do you serve and what services do you provide to them?
Well, folks that are homeless are our core demographic. These are people that are living in shelters. They might be truly living on the streets or couch surfing, essentially folks that have lost their homes. We also do serve folks, though, that are housed, but living in extreme low-income situations. And what we provide to them is we have regular and outreach clinics where we provide a veterinary exam, all of the medications, supplies, pet food. We also even offer, you know, surgeries and spays and neuters.
Oh, that's a long list of really essential services to keep a pet healthy. Well, I know that there are some fairly strict eligibility requirements to be a client of the PAW team. So how do potential clients connect with your organization?
Well, folks that are homeless, in many ways, we reach them through what we've developed called the Partner Agency Network. And that's just an informal network of social service agencies that work with the same clientele we do, the homeless or those living in, you know, very, very acute poverty situations. The agencies that work with the homeless can refer those clients to us, and we'll take them on as clients. Folks that are, however, housed or might have some resources, we still are able to help some folks that way. Unfortunately, we can't help everybody with all of their veterinary needs, but we do have a very strict financial qualification process, and folks can call us, and we can walk them through that. But basically, they need to be either homeless or living at or below the poverty level, and we look at all of their resources and what's coming in and what's going out to be able to, you know, help allocate the funds most equitably.
Mm-hmm. And do clients or their pets stay on your qualified list for quite a while, or do you review that every so often?
Yeah, well, actually, we have clients that have been with us and under our care for many, many years. But we do ask that everybody reevaluate their financial situation every 6 months. And the reason for that is because their situations change so very rapidly. They might be couch surfing today, but they're looking for work and they might land a job. And so we love it when those days happen. The happiest day at Paw Team is when someone calls and says, hey, send my records over to another vet. I'm back on my feet.
Yeah, that is a great moment for everybody involved. Well, I know I have personally attended a few of your clinics, and it is quite an operation. I think you could probably run a battleship, Cindy. But would you tell our listeners what happens at the clinic, you know, sort of step by step when people arrive and how you set it up? I know you bring in all your own equipment, your tables, your lighting, all your supplies, food, toys, and a whole battalion of volunteers. So yeah, tell us exactly, sort of step by step, what happens at a monthly clinic.
At our regular clinics, and we are at the St. Francis Complex, the first thing that happens is folks essentially line up, usually before we get there. They line up outside. It is a first come, first serve clinic. So I'm usually the first person out there. We hit the streets literally as soon as it's daylight and light enough to see. We check to see if they're currently registered as a client, if they've already filled out the paperwork with us. Those are the folks that we see first. We do see drop-ins, but, you know, at the end of the day, if we can, we get them checked in. We check for spay and neuter. That is a requirement for our services outside of the financial requirements, the only other requirement. We do insist that that be something folks must have for all their pets, and we help provide that service for them. And then we get them, we do what we call 10-second triage. And that's basically saying, now, are you here just for vaccines for your pet? Or is there a medical issue that we need to have them looked at by a vet? Once that happens, then we get them into our waiting room. At our Oak Street location, there is a large indoor waiting room where, you know, they'll be there until it's time to see the veterinarian. And we do then a regular check-in, just exactly like you would a traditional vet, where we'll do that wonderful checklist to say how the pet's doing that day. And then they will be sent off with a volunteer to the vet appointment, which is in the same building.
And what kind of problems are you likely to encounter? What kind of services are needed the most by your clients?
Well, the most common thing is vaccines, because every animal should be vaccinated. And of course, to get into housing, which is a huge goal for all of our clients, that is a requirement that they be licensed and vaccinated. So that's usually our most common request. And we vaccinate essentially every animal that comes through the door. But also we see an enormous number of just old animal problems. You know, the majority of the pets that are with our clients, the humans may be homeless, but they have had these animals since they were kittens or puppies in many, many cases. So the pets have aged in place with their humans. And just like me and others, the older you get, the more things go wrong.
That sounds familiar.
So we see a lot of things that are age-related. Arthritis or tumors, a lot of tumors. Dental issues. Any animal over roughly middle age is going to have some dental issues. So those are some very common things that we see.
Are there any problems that are more common amongst pets that live on the street? I'm thinking like flea infestations or something like that.
Yeah, we do see that, especially in the summer, a tremendous amount, because they're outside 100% of the time. So, you know, most animals, when they come through, we automatically give them flea control. But folks, you know, that are living on the street are exposed to a lot more harsh elements than if you're living in an apartment or a house. So you may see an animal, for example, that has more severe arthritis because they're doing so much more walking. On the positive side of that, they usually have the best toenails because
Yeah. Well, do you ever run into a situation where somebody comes in with an actual emergency or a very serious or complicated condition?
Yeah, that happens actually all the time. We're not an emergency vet, and so we are not set up to handle emergencies. If an animal, for example, is hit by a car, we do have to refer them to an emergency clinic that is set up to handle that. But we do see some very severe conditions that come in. You know, we had a request just the other day of a client who was a brand new client to us, and, you know, his dog ate an electrical cord,
which requires
significant and immediate surgery.
Yeah.
So we do see those things. Animals, generally don't pick good times to get sick. And they, if they happen close to the clinics, it's something we can help with in many cases.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that there has always been kind of an attitude out on the street that male dogs particularly should be left intact. Is that still the case? And are you running into any kind of resistance when you try to do education about the value of spay and neutering?
We do run into that. You know, we run into that for folks who live in apartments and houses as well as on the street. But you're right, there's sort of a misinformation out there. We do require spay and neuter. It's actually the one and only not negotiable thing. But we do set up those surgeries for them. We'll cover the majority of the costs. We have some grants from some wonderful folks from Animal Aid. We have a program called CSNP that will pay for canine spays and neuters. And for cats, we send them to Spay and Save. So those are services available at zero or very low cost. And we also offer something called Zooterin.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it is an FDA-approved procedure. Paw Team was one of the leaders in the area for it. We've been doing it for a number of years. And what it is a chemical sterilization. So instead of the traditional castration, it's just an injection. And the animal's sterile generally within about 30 days. So that's actually been really a great thing for many of our clients, because if an animal's out on the street, you know, that even though it's, it's a surgery site, let's face it, that can't be comfortable if you're lying under a bridge or on a sidewalk. So with an injection, there's a great deal less exposure. It's a lot easier for the animal to recover, a lot faster. But we do have some machismo out there where, you know, the clients will say, well, I want my dog to look like a dog.
Yes, well, there's something to be done for that as well, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, they do keep they do keep the family jewels. Yeah. So the animal remains visually intact. We do one of the fun things that has always kind of amused me about Zooterin is that to prove the animal is sterilized, that we have to tattoo them. So when we do reach some resistance, we talk about the fact that, you know, it's very safe, it's a faster recovery, and when you go through all the logical parts and they still kind of resist, it's like, but hey, they get a cool tattoo out of the deal. And that actually has turned a surprising number of people
good.
Around.
Yeah, well, they say it's how you frame an issue,
yep.
Right? Okay, great. Well, I think we're going to take a little break now, a short break, so everybody stay tuned and we'll be right back. This is KBOO Portland, and you're listening to Voices for the Animals. I've been talking with Cindy Scheel, the director of the Paw Team, about the essential services her agency provides to the most needy pets in our metro area. Cindy, it says on your website that life on the streets is hard on animals as well as for people, and without veterinary medical care, problems develop. Practically speaking, what are some of the problem-preventing impacts that your program has had on our community and its animals?
Well, one of the things that we do for every animal is vaccinate. And we do both the core and the other vaccinations, which does protect animals from most of the diseases they're going to be running into out there.
Including rabies,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a huge community service, because rabies is a valid risk. You know, it's not as prevalent as it is in other parts of the country, but it's one of the few zoonotic diseases that can be transmitted between humans and animals. And this way, we can make sure that the animals are safe and the humans are safe. It does actually keep our streets cleaner and safer.
And isn't it true that unneutered males tend to roam more and get into more trouble, and not only creating more perhaps unwanted litters, but becoming victims of car accidents and so forth?
Yeah, a lot of the things associated with an unaltered animal, there's always a higher aggression level. And by spaying and neutering, they tend to be a little calmer. They're a lot The animals that are out there on the streets are very, very social. I should say that first of all. They're used to being around a lot of people, but it only takes a split second for an animal to break off a lead and run after a squirrel, for example, or get into a fight with another animal. And so spaying and neutering is one of the ways we can help keep them safer.
Yes, and I guess it goes without saying, really, that if you prevent unwanted litters, then there are fewer animals to provide resources for in the future.
Yeah, we've had actually a fairly good and measurable impact on reducing the number of unwanted litters, which if they're, you know, if it's a family on the streets, for example, and an animal is pregnant, and they're going to have anywhere, you know, from maybe 2 or 3 to 10 pets. And it's one thing to be able to give away one or two animals, but what happens to all the rest? They generally are going to be ending up in a shelter, and many of our shelters are already overburdened. So this is one of the services that helps reduce the burdens on other shelters throughout the area, as well as keeps the animals happier and healthier.
Yes, and I know, getting back to the issue of dog bites, I think I read on the Paw Team website that about 97% of the dog bites that are recorded or known or whatever are perpetrated by unneutered dogs.
That's a national stat. Yeah. That's pretty typical.
Yeah. So it's easy to see that there are many benefits to both animals and their guardians and the community as well through your program, and particularly pushing the spay and neuter procedures, as I know that you and other agencies do too.
Yeah. We've also been able to see, you know, through our partner agency network, what that is, it's a large group of social services that can refer clients to us. We've been doing this for a couple of years now, and we're really beginning to see the impact of starting to provide preventative medicine. When I first started with Paw Team, you know, a lot of the clients we saw would come to us when there was an urgent situation. Oh my gosh, my animal is very sick suddenly. And that's because they didn't have access to preventative medicine to keep the animals healthier. And now they hear about us long before they need us, which is a marvelous thing, because, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Oh, definitely. And I know that you've mentioned a few of the agencies in the community that Paw Team partners with, but do you want to talk a little bit more about some of the other ones in case our listeners might find that information useful?
Yeah, they basically fall into three or four different categories. Social service agencies that directly serve the homeless, for example, Transition Projects, Outside In, New Avenues for Youth, Janus Project, all of those are organizations that work directly with people who are living on the streets. They are some of our partner agencies, and shelters, women's shelters, men's shelters, family shelters. There are very few shelters that accept animals. Unfortunately, that's something we're hoping to change more of. But we also work with domestic violence shelters. Even though a person who might be a victim of domestic violence might have financial assets, you know, to put it very bluntly, if you are walking out of your house at 3 a.m. to escape violence, and you go out with a 2-year-old in one arm and the dog in the other, you might as well be homeless. You don't have access to any of the funds. And so we help folks who are in those situations as well.
Yes, and I remember attending a workshop a number of years ago where the speaker was saying that sometimes the animals are the, I guess I'd say, the surrogate victims of violence, a way to get to the partner, to manipulate the partner through threatening or actually committing actual violence against that partner's beloved pet.
Yeah, for many of us, for most of us, I think, our pets are family. You know, we treat them like children. We take care of them just as much as we would our human children. You know, we had a situation right before Thanksgiving that's really indicative of this. It was an amazing woman who had been a victim of domestic violence for apparently a very long time. And she managed literally to escape the day before Thanksgiving when the abuser was just not at the apartment at that time. And she literally ran with her dog. But she'd been staying in that situation because she was afraid that he would abuse the dog.
It's a well-founded fear, apparently.
We got her into a human shelter with her pet, and she's now doing beautifully.
On the flip side of the coin, I have heard some people ask or say, well, why do people who can't afford pets or who are homeless or don't have a stable housing situation, why do they have pets in the first place?
Well, about 60% of our clients have had these animals since before the troubles hit, before they lost their job and therefore lost their house and kind of that terrible downward spiral. So they've had their pets with them since the pets, you know, were very, very small. And they would no more be parted from their animals. I mean, they won't. They will live on the street versus have to give up their animals. And I would do the same.
Right, because I think, you know, for many of these people, their pet is their only family.
Yeah, when you've lost everything, and this is one of the things that we see every single day, when you've lost everything, the pet becomes your support network. It's not an animal, it's a life support, just cleverly disguised as an animal. And we have clients tell us every single day, if it hadn't been for my dog, for my cat, for whatever, I would have killed myself. I would have continued drinking or doing drugs, but then one day I woke up and said, oh my gosh, my pet needs me. You know, my dog needs to be walked.
It becomes a reason to go on, to go on living.
Yeah, to keep going living and to stay clean and sober and to keep, you know, looking for work when it looks like the entire world is stacked against you. That pet doesn't care what you look like. They don't care what you smell like. They are there unconditionally for you. And our clients are there for their pets, and we're there for both of them.
Fabulous. Let's mention the important role that volunteers play at Paw Team, as I know you depend heavily upon unpaid professionals and other helpers to run your monthly clinics. How many people does it take to put on a clinic and to keep your office and operation running smoothly?
Oh, we have about 100 volunteers at any one time,
oh,
and they
gosh.
Do different tasks. Now, we absolutely could not do what we do without our volunteers. We only have 3 part-time people, including myself. Part-time is one of our favorite phrases we laugh at because, you know, that means that
that you're paid part-time, but you're working 1.5 times.
About 60 hours a week is average, But our volunteers are amazing. They are veterinarians, they're certified vet techs, they're people who help in the office, they're people who go out and pick up donations from our donation sites, they're people who transport animals to surgery, they are folks who help put on events for us. We couldn't do it without them. And there's a little bit of everything. There are folks who work on clinic days who are volunteers who help escort the clients and the pets through the clinic.
So for the benefit of our listeners, if someone out there might be interested in volunteering, is experience required, or do you work with people and train them as on the job, so to speak?
Experience is required if you're a vet.
Well, yes, or a brain surgeon. Right?
There you go. But other than that, no, we are more than happy to do that. We actually do an orientation a couple of times a month and then a brief orientation before each morning clinic. But no, we're happy to provide that training for folks. We have a few things where, you know, folks can work in the office. We have some things where people can work from their homes. And, of course, we have the big clinic days. There's lots of opportunities there.
Okay. And if someone were interested in volunteering, how could they learn more or connect with you?
Our website's probably the best way. The website is pawteam.org. pawteam.org. And if you go to the volunteer tab, it'll have a description for some of the jobs, and then you can sign up for them. And our fabulous volunteer coordinator, who is, of course, herself a volunteer, actually calls each and every person individually and chats with them about what they're looking to get out of the experience. So, you know, I think it's a very rewarding experience volunteering there.
Sounds like a great opportunity. In terms of your funding, where does your support come from, and what kind of donations are you looking for?
Our support is 100% from the community. We don't get any government funding. I basically raise everything we get. So our support comes from individuals like you and me. In folks who make small donations, some foundation support, we get that as well. And a lot of in-kind support, Deb. We get a lot of supplies that are, you know, passed directly on to our clients.
And what do you need?
What we need in terms of supplies, medications are always needed. Flea control and vaccines that are unexpired is a huge need. We actually have a short list on our website for other medications that we need. But for supplies for clients, things that are very, you know, commonly used, we need carriers. We need leashes and halters.
Blankets?
We need blankets and things. And in the winter, particularly in Portland, we do need raincoats for dogs because they are out in the street. Keeps them warmer, safer, drier. And that's also listed on our website as well.
All right. And I know that you moved recently, well, the last few months. Could you give us your current location and your phone number as well?
Absolutely. Paw Team is now located at the St. Francis Complex, which is at 1131 Southeast Oak Street. And we are right next to the St. Francis Dining Hall, which is one of the reasons we moved there. It's a place that many, many of the homeless already know, and we've been able to help a lot more folks by being there.
And you're very near to bus lines and public transportation.
Yes, we're actually right on, we're smack dab on the number 70 bus line, which will let you off at the corner, and we're very close, within three or four blocks, to four other bus lines. So it's really easy to get to by mass transit, and it's only a couple of minutes off the freeways.
Okay, well, be sure to put all of that contact information on our program page on the KBOO website. So what's up next for the PAW team? Do you have any clinic coming up or any kind of special event?
We do. Our next clinic is going to be March 12th, and that's going to be one of our regular Saturday clinics. We did move our clinics to Saturdays, a little bit better bus service for people rather than Sundays, so that's been a big help too.
And the vets are still able to come on Saturday? Yeah. I know that's a busy day for them usually.
It is. Lots of vets do work on Saturdays, but there are a lot of folks that have very flexible schedules too, and so we've been able to, it works pretty well. It certainly is easier for the clients to get there. So that's coming up. We'll have another one in April. Generally, they're every month. We do an outreach clinic in May.
Okay. Do you do any kind of special fundraiser, per se? Yeah.
We do. We have one, of course, at the holidays, and we'll be having a spring fundraiser coming up later on. We have a brand new event committee that's just starting to work on this. So
good.
That's kind of a stay tuned thing. But yes,
great.
We're hoping to raise funds, to be able to purchase more medications and some more medical equipment that we need.
Oh, yes, definitely. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Because I was going to ask you maybe just to share an anecdote or story or two about, some particular dog or cat or that has turned out to be a success story under the auspices of the PAW team.
Oh, actually, there's tons of them. There's some that you get really fond of. There's one client in particular, Rachel. We met her at an outreach clinic about 2 years ago. And she and her friend had this wonderful, marvelous pit bull. He was a puppy at the time. And it was, kind of the typical situation you'd talked about. It was like, oh, we don't want to get him fixed because, he's got to look macho. We actually did talk to them about that. We got the dog zootered, and he is a fabulous dog. It's been a couple years that we've been seeing them regularly. Dog's in really good health, but we've been providing, ongoing flea control and food and supplies. So he's, really wonderful pet. And Rachel stopped by the offices last week, and she said, yeah, I'm thinking that I need to get my medical records. She says, I just landed a job.
Aww.
So for the first time, they had been living in their car for 3 years.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And with their dog. But, through this whole thing, they were together with that wonderful dog, and they never gave up.
And I'm sure that having the support, the underlying support of PAW Team, as well as the other agencies that you partner with, but particularly, because you're the pet-centered service, that had made all the difference in their lives.
Yeah.
Okay, it looks like we're out of time now. It's been wonderful talking with you, Cindy, and thank you so much for being on our program, and keep up your valuable work that you're doing for the neediest pets in our community.
Thanks, Deb. Appreciate it very much.
We've been talking with Cindy Scheel, the Executive Director of the PAW Team in Portland. This is Deb Stedman thanking all of you for listening to Voices for the Animals today. To hear this program or podcasts from past programs, just go to our station's website at kboo.fm and click on Programs. And please plan to tune in again on the fourth Monday of next month. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
is KBOO Point Wind.
And now the KBOO News at noon for Monday, February 22, 2016. As news continues to be released on Portland's dirty air problem, an environmental group has chartered a bus to take activists to Salem to attend a House Energy and Environment Commission meeting tomorrow morning. The bus will leave from Cleveland High School at 6:30 a.m. Increased air testing has now found high levels of cadmium, lead, nickel, arsenic, and chromium in Portland's air. State officials are now calling on the almost 10,000 people who live within a half mile of the Bullseye Glass Studio to not eat any produce from their gardens this year. Oregon State public health officials are also offering free blood tests for residents who believe they may have been exposed to the toxins. As the news that state health officials knew for years of the high levels of heavy metals in Portland's air but failed to act, local politicians are now demanding immediate action or are threatening to create a metro-wide air pollution authority. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales and Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori have sent a letter to Governor Kate Brown demanding that the state create new laws and regulations on air emissions and update the state's air toxin program and also create a state action plan on diesel emissions. Hales and Cafori are also demanding the state establish a firm timeline for the new rules and a multi-year funding program for the changes. In more local news, Clackamas County public health officials urging anyone who attended a movie and ate at the Sandy Cinema Movie Theater concession stand between February 12th and the 15th to get tested for hepatitis A. County officials were notified late on February 17th that an employee of the theater had tested positive for hepatitis A, leading them to issue the warning. Clackamas County is also asking anyone who thinks they may have been exposed to call